we are met to call from out of the past stories strange and weird.
Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre.
Story of the supernatural, the supernormal, dramatized like fantasy, the mystery, the unknown. We tell you this frankly. So if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these madmen, play, we urge you calmly, seriously, to turn off your radio now.
Welcome back to the horror. I've got two stories from the Black Mass for you this week. A series that took to the air in the 1960s over two stations in California. I've got two stories for you today because they're both kind of short. The first one's titled O Mirror Mirror and aired February 12th, 1964. After that, we'll hear Proof Positive from September 6th, 1964. Here's the Black Mass.
He is Auntie herself to show us how the old school solves the teenage problem. In Nigel Neal's tale, O Mirror, Mirror.
Now there's no call to start so, Judith. It's only your auntie. There, lie back in the bed now. Let me pull the covers round you against the draught. Oh, and a sip of water. Your forehead's hot, dear, here. No, you're wrong, dearest. It's hot. It's not normal. Yes, I know it feels cool to you, dear. Oh, but then, never mind. Poor little Judy. Well, I'm going to sit with you for a while. There. My, what fine cane chairs you have in your room, haven't you? I think they are two of the cosiest in the whole house. Age doesn't matter with really good articles. You know that, don't you? And funding repairs sometimes spoil things we've grown used to and fond of. Now I want you to lie quite still and restful. I'm going to talk to you, dear. Yes, it's about what happened yesterday afternoon. Won't you tell me why you did it, Judith? You may as well, because I know anyway, more than you do. No, don't hide your face like that. Oh, it hurts your auntie more than you can tell when her little girl won't speak to her. Yesterday I was arranging her tray and wondering what would please her most. I had found a bright, clean napkin for her tray, and I was cutting bread thin as thin and corner-wise, because that is how she likes it. And then I looked out of the window. Well, what I saw upset me very much. It was my little girl running, wasn't it? Running far down the garden to where the wall joins the big door, and peeping behind her to see if I watched. But I was behind the curtains, and she couldn't see me, could she? Well, then I felt something inside me here, a tight, cold feeling all round my heart, because of two things. One was that she should go so terribly against my wishes. So many times I have said, since she was quite tiny, you mustn't go outside the garden, Judith, and you ought never to run. But there she was, in spite of all I had said and done for her. It made your auntie extremely unhappy, Judith. But the second reason was sadder still. As I ran out onto the lawn, I was saying to myself, now she will have to be told everything, and it may break her heart. Something wicked has made her do this, and she must know so that she can resist it. That's what I said to myself as I was running down the path. She will have to be told. You weren't going very fast, were you, dear? You were so young. And I am your old aunt, and yet I caught up with you among the pear trees. Now I want you to take another sip of water. There. Are you quite comfortable? You must be very brave, dear. Give me your hand. Oh, such a frail little hand, tight in mine. Very brave indeed, Judith. I'll have to tell you something that will be a very great shock. I'm going to be as gentle as I can, but it will still be a shock. Let me see. You remember that fairy tale from when you were very small? The Ugly Duckling. It looked so odd and different that the other ducks and everybody drove it away. And then it changed and grew into a beautiful swan. Do you know what beautiful is, Judy? You liked that story very much, didn't you? Now just think, dear, supposing that the duckling hadn't changed at all. Supposing it became still uglier. That wouldn't have made a very happy ending, would it? Oh, hold your auntie's hand very tightly, my love, and try to be ever such a brave girl. You see, Judith, I'm afraid you're that kind of a duckling. Oh, there, there. Ever since you came here, as a tiny tot with no mother and daddy, I've known some day I should have to tell you that you were different from other people. Now you're understanding. You're understanding why nobody comes here. Why I have to have a high, safe wall round the garden. That you can never go outside. And why your auntie takes such care of you every minute of the day. I suppose you've often wondered why it was like that, haven't you? But you've always been so good and done as auntie bid. And auntie loves you so very much. It would have been the same if your parents had lived. Your lovely mamma would have done just what I did. We understood each other so well, as sisters do. I knew everything she should have, every single thing that was best for her. Then she married your father. She had no right. She had no right. We'll not talk about that. It's only what I said before. He wasn't really for her, not for her. That's it, he wasn't good enough. And so they've both gone a long time. And poor old auntie's minding this little girl instead. And the little girl wants to know why she cannot go out and see the world at last. Because she's grown to 15 years old. Well, now, just wait a minute. Here's the mirror, down from its hook. I can rest it against the foot of the bed. Carefully does it when the frame is loose. Can you see into it, Judith? Raise yourself a little, dear, see? There. See the precious duckling. See her? Oh, this is the part that's going to hurt. Even with her auntie's arm tight around her. I want you to look at that shape in the mirror, Judy. Such a slender, curvy body, isn't it? So pale and soft. Those swollen little breasts. Did you think that was right, did you? Oh, now look at me, dear. I'm not like that at all. See how strong and solid I am. Straight everywhere and every line. That's the way people are, Judith. People outside. That little face of yours, Judy, pale, nearly like the bed sheets, except for two pinky cheeks and red lips, and eyes as blue as copper rot. Mine are dark brown, and my skin is dark and tough, and hair. Look in the mirror, dear, see that soft, thin, shiny yellow, like fading grass. Not thick and black. Like other people's. Oh, my little Judy is crying. Oh, what sobs. You just didn't know, did you, how different you were? I've always kept it from you. That is why there are no pictures of people in the rooms. I didn't want you to be hurt. Brown-skinned and hard they are, with strong black hair. And I'm one of them. I'm one of them. so I can go out and talk among them, and they don't know about you, these dark people. Only I think of my little girl at home. That's different. Now, Judy, do you know what would have happened if your old auntie hadn't cared for you yesterday and run to stop you and guide you back into this house? Do you know what would have happened if you had gone past the pear trees and the green water tank and up to the big door, and if it hadn't been locked, but it always is, and you had opened and walked outside? Oh, something very horrible, Judith, something very horrible. You would have seen people like me, all like me, Judy, only not smiling, I'm afraid. You would have seen them halt in the distance, and point, and murmur to each other in their dry grey robes, and move softly in the shadows. And presently, as you walked, you would hear tiny shufflings and mutterings, and you would glimpse a head of a person on the other side of a wall keeping pace with you, or a grey hand signalling in a doorway. Then things would come quietly through the hot dust. They would be people, and they would be following you, because you were different. Remember how all the animals were unkind to the ugly duckling. People can be far crueler, Judy. People can be far crueler. You might speak to one of them, but your voice would be tiny with fright. His head would turn away with eyes remaining on you. And he would talk loudly and hard, not to you, to the others. You would feel the whisper run through, sealing them against you. And teeth and eyes would shine out from the whole band of them. Then they would be thrustling, jostling, and screaming, and all the roads clattering with laughter. Look at the eyes! They would shout, look at the eyes! See how it cries! There it is, running, running, running! And the shouts would become the echo of your own feet, beating along the middle of the lanes, and the stones ringing under them, running, running, until you couldn't run any longer. And behind they would be coming, closing in on you, getting closer and closer, like one of those dreams Auntie calls nightmares. But this time it would be true, Judy. Oh, perhaps in your dreams you know. It's terrible, Judy. Oh, it's terrible to be different. Terrible, terrible. But your Auntie's here. She understands. And there's a high wall and nothing to be afraid of if they don't see inside. And when you make that singing, or sit watching the clouds and wondering, or tremble at the thunder, there's only Auntie to know that you're doing what no one else does. Isn't there? Your Auntie's your friend. Who understands? Oh, my Judy is brave, and she won't cry any more now, will she? Just one last look in the mirror at that strange little face, so that she'll know finally what her auntie meant. Look, Judy, look into the mirror. Oh, my poor little girl, can't she bear to look, can't she, then? Don't hide in the bedclothes, dear. You're never strange to me, you know. You're never strange to me. Take the mirror away. Oh, wait, Judith, wait. Wait. I've something for you. I knew what a horrible shock it would be, and I got something that might help my little girl to bear it. There, right in her little hand. Do you know what it is? Do you know what it is, dear? It's a bottle of stain. Yes, stain. Quite harmless brown stain. Here, look. Look, it smells rather sweet, doesn't it? Smell. Now, if she wants, she can put a little into her washing water to darken those hands and those pink and white cheeks. It may burn a little bit, dear. But when she looks into the mirror, she won't seem so different after all. She can pretend to be like me, can't she? And after that, we must simply be patient and anti-loving. because we haven't so very long in this world, have we? No, not very long. Now, if the little girl stops crying and lies quietly and still, she shall have a plate of bread and butter, cut just as she likes it, and some secret little treat. Her auntie will sit with her in this beautiful cozy room, and we shall have a game of Ludo. For I understand. I do understand, my Judy, and she's my very own. She's my very own for always. Poor little Judy. My poor little Judy. My poor little Judy.
As president of the local psychical society, I had received a note from our speaker a little more than a week before, written by a hand which trembled with sickness, age, or drunkenness. It asked urgently for a special meeting of the society. An extraordinary, a really impressive experience was to be described while still fresh in the mind, though what the experience had been was left vague. Now, I would have hesitated to comply if the note had not been signed by a Major Philip Weaver, Indian Army retired. One had to do what one could for a brother officer. The trembling of the hand must have been neither age or sickness. It proved principally to be the latter, actually. Well, we met for the first time on the platform. Major Weaver was not more than 60, tall, thin, and dark, with an ugly, obstinate nose, the most unlikely person to have experienced anything unexplainable at all. But what antagonized me most was that Weaver used scent. A white handkerchief which drooped from his breast pocket exhaled as rich and sweet an odour as a whole altar of lilies.
A privilege, Colonel Crashaw.
Dr. Brown, Major Weaver.
How do you do?
A privilege.
General Leadbitter, Major Weaver.
Privilege, I'm sure.
A pleasure, I'm sure.
And Mrs. Leadbitter?
Charmed.
Well, I think we'd better get right along. Everyone seems to be here. I'm sorry it's such a small audience, sir, but it's terrible weather, you know.
Does anyone object if I smoke?
Yes. Would you mind not smoking?
Yeah. All right.
My throat has been bad for some time.
Oh, yes. Well, what with this terrible weather, you know, influenza, throats...
In my case, Colonel Crashaw, in my case, it's cancer. Cancer.
Well, I think we better get right along.
Yes.
Yes, I will take this chair over here.
Colonel Crashaw, and members of the Psychical Society. I am deeply privileged to address this distinguished organization. Your kind indulgence toward my urgent request will be duly rewarded. You shall have the opportunity to hear of an extraordinary, I might say, a really impressive experience, which is sure to alter your whole view of the relative values of matter and spirit. Spirit. The spirit. And matter, the body, our temple, as it were, of the spirit, the home and temporary habitat of the enduring spirit.
Mystic stuff, you know. I don't know.
The spirit is stronger, far stronger than anyone. Anyone realizes the physiological action of heart and brain and nerves and so on are subordinate, I say, subordinate to the spirit. The spirit is so much stronger than you. You think it's immortal. It's yes. Immortal.
I think the man's sick.
It is immortal. Now this is important. I can tell you a story. Signs and wonders.
Major Weaver.
When I was at Simla, in Simla, and I said the spirit much stronger than you. Galatians, the epistle of Saint Paul, he that soweth to the spirit shall of the spirit reap life everlasting. If we live in the spirit, immortal, I assure you, the spirit does not die when the body dies. Be led by the spirit. When I was in Simla...
Can't you make him stop, Crayshaw? The Simla, man is obviously very ill. And what good is this talk anyway?
Yes, I'll try, but give him a moment.
Much stronger, and
all right.
Proof, immortal spirit. Proof, much stronger. Proof, positive. I'll give you proof positive. Spirit, proof.
My God. Dr. Barnes.
I told you to stop him. Here, throw his handkerchief away. The perfume is all over the hall.
Give it here. How is he?
Send them all away. Send them away at once. He's dead. My God, he's dead. And Crayshaw, bring back the handkerchief. Quickly.
I understood. The most hideous stench of decaying flesh came from the body the moment the handkerchief was removed. Major Weaver's appearance was incredible. The body might have been one fished from the sea a long while after death. The flesh of the face seemed as ready to fall as an overripe fruit.
Crayshaw, the man must have been dead a week.
Proof he had probably meant that the spirit outlived the body, that it tasted eternity. But all he had certainly revealed was how, without the body's aid, the spirit in 7 days decayed into whispered nonsense.
That's the horror for today. If you want to hear more from the Black Mass, more horror, more old-time radio, just visit RelicRadio.com. Find this podcast, the others, and links to everything else Relic Radio. There's also a link there to our donate button. That's how this is all made possible. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll talk again soon with another episode of The Horror. The Horror is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.